Welcome to the Cyber Rants Podcast, where we're all about sharing the forbidden secrets and slightly embellished truths about corporate cybersecurity programs. We're ranting, we're raving, and we're telling you the stuff that nobody talks about on their fancy website and trade show giveaways, all to protect you from cyber criminals. And now, here's your hosts, Mike Rotondo, Zach Fuller, and Lauro Chavez.
Hello, and welcome to the Cyber Rants Podcast. This is your co-host, Zach Fuller, joined by Mike Rotondo and Lauro Chavez. And today, we are talking about financial services cybersecurity. Silent Sector, our firm, has done work for banks and credit unions and insurance companies and companies that are kind of like insurance companies, but not really insurance companies. We've worked with private equity firms, fiduciaries. This is a topic that is important. It's a very critical sector for obvious reasons and a very targeted sector for obvious reasons. The cyber criminals want to go after those people that control the money. So that's what we're talking about today. But Mike, before we do you have some good news for us?
No.
Or just bad news? Why don't you kick us off with the bad news then?
The bad news. I'm not going to go in depth on some of these headlines. It's just, here we go. Microsoft has a bad week. That's a headline for you.
Another one. Seems like a trend.
Yeah, Microsoft admits to have mistakenly signed a software driver loaded with rootkit malware. Attackers breach Microsoft customer service accounts. Microsoft successfully hit by a dependency hijacking attack again. Researchers leak POC exploit for a critical Windows RCE vulnerability. Microsoft translation bugs open Edge browser to trivial UXSS attacks. And Windows 10 emergency update fixes PDF opening issues. And finally, in Microsoft's very bad week, 700 million LinkedIn accounts, records, which LinkedIn is owned by Microsoft, for sale on Hacker Forum as of June 22nd. Second massive LinkedIn breach reportedly exposes the data of 700 million users, which is more than 92% of the total 756 million users on LinkedIn, and the database is on sale on the dark web. It includes phone numbers, physical addresses, geolocation data, and inferred salaries. It does not include passwords. So just keep that in mind. I think it was, Laura, correct me if I'm wrong, but it was a bot scraping thing. It wasn't an actual hack, but still.
Yeah, that's right. Still frowned upon, still illegal, certainly. Yeah, scraping.
I was going to say, to add insult to injury, there's all these articles out slamming Bill Gates for stuff that apparently he did during his time there. So it's just not good overall for them.
Not at all. And then there's also discussions of the antitrust stuff for tech, which Congress is talking about for Amazon, Google, Apple, Facebook, Twitter, and Microsoft, who also happens to be one of the advisors of the federal government on security. Maybe they should work on their own house. A couple other critical ones. The Cisco ASA vulnerability is actively exploited. The specific Cisco ASA vulnerability is a cross-site scripting vulnerability tracked to CVE-2020-3580. It was originally fixed in October of 2020 and then popped up again and fixed again in April 2021. Just a heads up on the R-Evil ransomware's new Linux encryption targets ESXi virtual machines. The R-Evil ransomware operation is now using a Linux encryptor that targets and encrypts VMware ESXi virtual machines. By targeting virtual machines this way, R-Evil can encrypt many servers at once with a single command. So lock your ESXi machines down. And further proof, IT talent is in short supply. Ransomware gangs now creating websites to recruit affiliates. At least two ransomware gangs in need of hackers to run the attacks have been using their sites to advertise features of their encryption tools to attract new recruits. To attract partners, Lockbit claims to offer the fastest encryption and file stealing tools all over the world. And another gang promoting their ransomware as a service operation on their website recently is Himalaya, an actor that started this, it started its activity this year. So that's the news. Good luck, Microsoft. We'll talk about you next week, I'm sure. Laurel?
Gosh, man. Well, that's okay. You know, crash and burn.
Yeah.
Nothing surprising there. Anyway, so for exploits this week, a couple things I want to talk about. They both have to do pretty much the same thing. And yeah, yet again, we're talking about WordPress plugins. So if you're using WordPress, be careful. If you've got the XCloner, if you need to use the XCloner plugin, make sure you're upgrading beyond 4.2. There's a remote code execution exploit payload ready to go for that version. and versions below it. So again, if you must use this for functionality, make sure you keep your plugins updated. The other one is a polls plugin for WordPress. Allows you to do polling and that sort of activity from different types of sites. There's a stored cross-site scripting there, so pretty vulnerable, especially if people are coming to the site for poll information, and if there's a stored cross-site scripting that's reflecting them to something like malware. So again, make sure if you must date a WordPress person and update your plugins. And that's all the interesting exploitable activity that we've got for payloads this week. Zach, what are we talking about? Baseball?
I was going to say, it sounds like Microsoft and WordPress are good buddies. They must hang out a lot.
I didn't even talk about the Google exploits this week because, at a certain point, it's just like enough is enough.
Being with Microsoft's like dating. It's like dating somebody, and it's fun for a while. It's a lot of fun. Then you find out they're doing heroin in the bathroom, and you come in, catch them with a spoon and the lighter. And right around that time, Sancho kicks open the door talking about the prostitute and how much money that you now owe. So it's a big risk, you know what I mean?
Wow, that's a good analogy to Microsoft. It definitely catches you unexpectedly and costs you a lot of money, but hey, that's
it's a lot of fun.
It's almost like you need a news hiatus. And
it's a lot of fun to use, man. It's got pretty colors. It's got pretty colors. It's so much fun to use it.
Look at the latest version.
Want even more Cyber Rants? Be sure to subscribe to the Cyber Rants podcast. Get your copy of our best-selling book, Cyber Rants, on Amazon today. This podcast is brought to you by Silent Sector, the firm dedicated to building world-class cybersecurity programs for mid-market and emerging companies across the U.S. Silent Sector also provides industry-leading penetration tests and cyber risk assessments. Visit silentsector.com and contact us today.
Let's get to it then, shall we? Talk about financial services, cybersecurity. So if you're working in a bank or credit union or insurance company or private equity firm or VC group or any other variant of somebody that deals with money quite a bit, you're a major target. So in fact, I forgot to list VC groups in the companies we've worked with in the past. But that said, we've seen some pretty crazy circumstances in those environments, and no two are created equal, right? Especially when you get into things like credit unions, for example. You have credit unions with thousands of employees, and you have credit unions with 50 employees. So very different environments, different considerations. But like we talked about last week, and when we talked about healthcare cybersecurity and financial services cybersecurity, the fundamentals still remain, right? Don't forget the fundamentals, the basics apply to all organizations. But there are some considerations and compliance requirements that apply to financial services. So Mike and Laura, you have extensive backgrounds with Fortune 500 financial services companies down to startups and mid-market. So what are the pitfalls you see or considerations? What advice would you have right off the bat for people concerned with cybersecurity in the financial services industries?
Well, I think a lot of times there's the perception, especially in the small players, that we don't really have anything anybody wants to steal. And that's something that we continually have to overcome. We're not big enough. We don't have a big enough portfolio. And what the reality is that, the cyber criminals are out there because you have data and you have money, and that's what they want. They either want data or they want money, or they want to take your data and ransom it for money. And money is in these financial institutions. So I think due to the target on the back of most of these financial institutions, you have to take your due diligence and due care to a higher level than many other types of companies, simply because of the quantity and quality of data that you have. And the reputational risk of being hacked is greater. When I worked for a very large bank doing compliance, we were actually told if someone breaks in and steals $20,000 over the internet that we weren't, hacks in and steals 20 grand, we're not even going to say a word because we're more concerned about our reputational damage than we are about our, the 20 grand. I don't know if that's changed, that philosophy changed. That was a while ago. But anyway, that's the concern right now, is that you have to keep a greater level of due diligence. And that means you have to be, your sanitation of your cyber environment has to be cleaner. Your training has to be better. Your pen tests have to be more frequent. You need to do internal and external, and I'm sure Laura will talk about more of that. But that's what I see from a bank perspective, is those kind of pitfalls of not truly understanding the threat landscape.
Yeah, that's always a big thing for, and we're, you know, and here's the other thing I think to consider about this conversation is that, you know, these institutions usually will have a team, most of them, unless they're like BCCs or something, right? They'll have a team of cybersecurity individuals. And like Mike said, they'll have a team of compliance individuals that are doing various things. So now you've got the bureaucracy and politics that unfortunately can slow certain things down and also convolute certain information, you know, regarding risk. Because now you've got individuals that may be more concerned with, you know, continuing their career in you know, said location versus doing the right things to protect, you know, consumer data and the data that the banks own around the, you know, the financial information and things like that. But I think that, you know, the challenge typically, you know, we see is the, you know, aside from all the crazy stuff you have to do from a program management perspective, right? Like Mike was alluding to, you've also got the people problem, right? And I think that's where I think, you know, we see a lot of challenges with team, maintaining team resilience, I guess, if you want to call it that. So just having enough people to do the jobs that you need. And so I think it's causing that shortage that we're seeing in professionals is causing some organizations to have to, you know, reach out to partnerships. And so those types of processes now have to be gone through from that third party vendor management perspective, right? Because now you're outsourcing parts of the business that you can't support because of, you know, whatever, right? Not enough minds or whatever the case may be, right? Can't hire the right talent in your area. And so now you're stuck with a partnership, or, you know, you're going to, you know, large, you know, organization to bring, you know, rent of people down to assist you, but you've got to do that vendor management process. And so Mike was, you know, talking about that due diligence elevation now increases because the risks are higher, right? Around the, cause we're talking about, you know, money, not just we can ransom you. They can actually get access to, you know, could get access to money that belongs to, you know, the people that you're holding on behalf of. So I think that's where that due diligence step increases. And so I think that's where we see some vendor management program places like SLIP for financial institutions, where they're not really managing the supply chain very well at first. It's not something that they're considered from a risk matrix. They're working really hard to protect the vitals of the business systems, right? Which is all, you know, obviously needs to be protected as well, but you can't forget about that, those other parts of the puzzle too.
Yeah, and they don't always understand the internal attack vector. That's a good idea. You know, that's a great point, Laurel, that they have to look at those vendors.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why we do those internal pen tests. And, you know, I think a lot of that, you know, the risk assessment requirements for the financial regulations will, you know, when you do a risk assessment, you can certainly scope it out, but you can't just keep it the same thing every year. You can't look at one box every year, right? You have to start, you could start that way, sure, but it starts to look like you're hiding things if right. You keep it that way, right?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I'm done. I was just going to say, yeah, you certainly have to just keep, you know, keep looking around internal and external.
On another note, you need to switch auditors every couple of years. And we've come across some companies that are just comfortable with their auditor, and they've had them for 10 or 15 years. And I think at a certain point, that relationship will supersede the intensity of the review, simply because you have a relationship with this vendor for 10 or 15 years that's doing your auditing. So even though we are in this business, we would still recommend you change, you know, every couple of years, just to make sure that some different set of eyes are looking, or bring somebody in to check somebody's work, check the existing vendor's work, just to ensure that you're taking the proper precautions. Because, you know, we've seen that with large companies with PCI, and we've seen that with, you know, where, you know, we know the vendor, we know the auditor, we get the same auditor every year, we go out for drinks, have a nice dinner, and then, you know, they give us a, you know, nice soft audit. So that stuff needs to be checked, and you really need to, management needs to take active control of this and make sure that things are properly audited and looked at. On another note, this is not necessarily a technology thing, but what we found is that some of the smaller banks, and actually some of the larger banks, they don't pay very well, to be honest with you. So they have a hard time.
They really don't.
No,
they don't.
They have a hard time retaining talent because of that. So you're going to bring in a mercenary consulting company who doesn't have the same level of concern, I mean, other than the talent sector, but doesn't have the same level of concern for your enterprise that your employees would have because they're not invested in it. They're just getting paid. They're mercenaries. So I would recommend highly to any of our, you know, millions of listeners that they would, if you work in a banking industry, bump that pay a little bit. Pay for training.
Yeah. If you count the bots that are listening to us, it's like a quadrillion.
Awesome how many fans we have. It's like celebrity status.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't realize that, but
that's awesome. Spotify reached out to us because they're tired of that Joe Rogan guy. And I thought we would do better.
Like, man, these guys, cybersecurity, it's a hot topic. Well, one of the things, we get a lot of calls, a lot of outreach from I'd put them on the kind of smaller realm of financial services firms, like credit unions, for example, that have NCUA compliance, right? Because we've done a bunch of that. They're looking for risk assessments for NCUA and for the organization as a whole. And it's interesting, in the conversation, it's tough. I feel for them because they're a few hundred people, essentially a small business, a couple locations or whatever, but you're exactly right in that they are struggling to, bite off the extra expense of getting, paying their security people better. Right. So, or they're same with their IT staff. Right. So they see a lot of turnover. Meanwhile, they're trying to maintain compliance and security and all that. But I unfortunately don't know that there's a way around it. I mean, we always recommend, for financial services companies, they should be doing quarterly pen testing. Right. They need to be doing continuous vulnerability scanning, all these other activities, but they're in essence for a small business to do that and allocate budget for that. It's difficult. So and unfortunately when they don't and something happens, then their breach expenses are much, much higher than what they would have paid just being proactive. And then it takes them often years to get proactive after that, because now they just had all this overhead and expense that they're licking their wounds from for the next year or two. So it's a tough dilemma, but I think it comes down to education, what we're doing here. They need to be doing regular pen testing, internal and external, right? A lot of organizations, it's not the case. If you're a construction company and you get hacked, you're probably still going to be putting up 2x4s the next day. It's just the nature of the business, right? But with financial services, you get hacked, all the notification requirements, all the legalities, lost clients, on and on. Nobody wants to hear that, the place that their money is sitting is not secure, right? It's probably the worst thing.
Reputational damage is what they're really concerned about in a lot of ways. And as far as I know, you can't put ransomware on 2x4s or PVC pipe. So.
That's true.
But you can put fungus, and that's kind of what ransomware is, right?
It's like a mold. Fungus that just spreads. Ransomware spreads quicker, but yes, you're right.
I pick it off my bread and eat it, whatever. I'm not wasting
fungus. You can take down with bleach, but
it's well, here's an example, right? So we had a financial institution that we spoke with that they do weekly penetration tests. They use an automated platform, right? So it's not, he doesn't have some manual steps, but they at least do an automated sweep, with the commercial products on a weekly basis, which is pretty impressive. And then as an example, in my hometown in Tejas, there was a small local bank that had a chief information security officer opening for a whopping salary of $47,000 a year. Wow. And so I thought that was an interesting thing. Now this was a couple of years ago. So, you're not going to receive, talent from other places, right? If you're not going to be competitive at a nationwide market level, which is, I think, necessary for at this point, right? For these types of talents and these types of, positions that you're asking the individual. And not only that, the amount of risk you're asking them to juggle, right? And resolve for you.
CISO gig is not a son-in-law job unless your son-in-law is really good. It's not one of those things you just throw someone in that, they're reading the CISSP book, so they're obviously a CISO. You got to have experience and you got to have talent. And unless you do, you may only be worth $47,000, but you're not any good. And you really need that true experience. And so to be competitive, unlock those purse strings.
Yeah. And if you get moved into one of those positions, you know, and you're not, you know, you kind of, it's either one, it's going to be two things, right? There's going to be an ego-based response yeah. or there's going to be the opposite, right? Where it's like, I realize I'm in a place where I need help. Reach out for help, you know, find the help that you need. You know, it's not, you know, we don't do anything on our own, right? We all require others to help us. And so CISOs are no different, right? You may be great at leadership, great at obtaining budget. You may be great at working with the business leadership to get budget. You're still going to need talent to, you know, do those work. And I think that that's important to, you know, I think a lot of the smart ones out there understand that that's what they're working toward.
Or find a consultant that's willing to mentor you. You know, it's like, you know, for a price, you know, get with a consultant that, you know, buy 30 hours or whatever their time so you can ask them questions, get their guidance, get some input, so you're not, you know, bouncing everything off yourself. And, you know, an echo chamber of one is not a good echo chamber.
So, yeah. YouTube will only absolutely. Get you so far.
Yeah. And the books only get you so far, right? I mean, there's a whole lot of stuff in the CISSP books and the CRIS books that, you know, that's nice, but, you know, you can't, unless you have a massive organization, you're not going to be able to follow. You're not going to have an audit committee, a steering committee, a security committee, blah, blah, blah. And it's going to be a committee of one on a lot of those things. So depending on the size of your company.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's one of those things. I mean, I think it's clear that any kind of mid-market and smaller type financial services firms of any kind really require outside help. I mean, generally speaking, they're not going to be able to afford or be willing to afford a full security department. So generally what we see is they usually have some pretty good IT people that kind of take the bull by the horn, so to speak, and try to implement as much as they can within the time they have with all the other operations going on to align with the various compliance requirements. And get that done, but they're not going to be doing it, you know, unbiased testing, risk assessments, all of that. There's also, you know, considerations around the complexity of environments with a lot of organizations have, you know, multiple locations scattered all over a state or all over a region. So, you know, consideration about that. A lot of times the IT resources are strapped thin, just chasing down all the problems and all the, you know, help desk functions. They kind of handle everything. So in these companies, a lot of times we see, you know, the IT team is 2 to maybe 6 people in a lot of cases. And yet generally no security professionals, or maybe they have one very junior security analyst, which is an outstanding asset to have, but they're not going to really build, maintain the formalized security program for you. So get outside help. And, you know, we won't go into all the compliance requirements and things like, you know, FINRA and SOX and NCUA and all these things that organizations have to chase down. But the same is true in what we talked about and what we've talked about previously when we've discussed compliance, which is you have to operationalize it. You have to build it into your processes day in and day out. And if you can't do that, again, get outside help. Right. But you can't be putting everything on hold for the IT side of the company for, you know, a couple months before the audit and then trying to pick up back up afterward. It just doesn't work that well. And then, you know, finally, you got, you know, obviously social engineering is a huge, huge threat. The human element is very susceptible and they're a massive target in financial services companies. So make sure you're running ongoing security awareness training, test phishing campaigns. There's great platforms out there like KnowBefore that can, you can basically set it up and in a fairly automated fashion and run those campaigns. But make sure your people adopt a security conscious culture, because without that, no matter what else you do, you're going to be highly susceptible. Any other final thoughts or smart or snarky remarks, as Laura likes to say?
Well, I think you need to have One key piece is you need to have at least one dedicated security person. Your KTLO people can have security tasks, but they cannot perform the function of security officer and KTLO and do both effectively. And that's, you know, you can't do that dotted line. It has to be, you need at least one dedicated resource. That's all they function and do.
And they're going to cost more than $54,000 a year.
Exactly. And then, I mean, even if you're outsourcing your security function to somebody else, you still want an internal security function so that they know what you're talking, a security resource, so they know what this outside company is telling you, because you really don't want the security company telling you that, you know, the problem is that your flux capacitor isn't working properly and that's why you're not secure. You need to have an understanding of exactly what they're talking about.
Wait. So the flux capacitor has to do, I didn't realize that, man, because mine's been broke for some time. It's no wonder.
Exactly. No wonder.
Microsoft and WordPress have both been having that problem too. Yeah. Seems to be a trend. Dude, maybe we should get in the flux capacitor. We'll get in the flux capacitor repair business here.
There you go.
Soon. But we'll
do the doors are falling off that DeLorean, let me tell you.
How many times do you think flux capacitor has been mentioned in cybersecurity podcasts throughout the years? Tens of thousands.
We're going to start. Yeah, maybe. But if you keep saying it, we're going to start popping up next to Back to the Future things that people are Googling flux capacitor, flux capacitor.
Some great, great SEO strategy for us. Right. Yeah. Well, great. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'd love to hear your comments, feedback. Go to cyberrantspodcast.com. There's a little web form and you can just tell us your thoughts, suggestions, or reach out on LinkedIn to any of the hosts here. And we'd love to take your thoughts and ideas on what you'd like to talk about in the future. And be sure to subscribe to the podcast. Let people know about it if you like it. Thank you so much for listening. And we will connect again next week. And good luck to everybody in the financial services space, especially if you're heavily, heavily reliant on Microsoft and WordPress. Extra good luck to you.
Check your flux capacitor.
Thanks, everyone. Have a good
day.
Take
care.
Pick up your copy of the Cyber Rants book on Amazon today. And if you're looking to take your cybersecurity program to the next level, visit us online at www.silentsector.com. Join us next time for another edition of the Cyber Rants Podcast.